Welcome to the inaugural episode of Geeky Crossroads. I am your host, David Heath, aka Farmer Dave. And now you're thinking, why am I not on the People's Guide to the Cthulhu Mythos? Why are you listening to this? And what is said Geeky Crossroads? Or not. I'm pre-recording this and honestly, I don't know what you're thinking, but work with me on this bit, okay? So the answer to the first question is yes, I am still a co-host on the People's Guide to the Cthulhu Mythos, and we still will be doing episodes, but instead of a three-part show, we're going to be doing a two-part show. One part where I, DB, and Gretchen will discuss a concept or a trope from the Cthulhu Mythos, and part two, we'll be discussing a horror movie that one of the three of us chose. So we're basically breaking off the middle part, and we're doing this, making its own show, and we're doing this for several reasons. One is logistics. Two is to sort of give people maybe smaller episodes that they can digest easier. But this also gives me, where we're definitely going to be talking about things cosmic horror-y and, wow, that sounded terrible, as well as, you know, Lovecraftian horror. We're going to be talking a lot more on other subjects in this particular show. So the concept of Geeky Crossroads is this is where a lot of geeky things or nerdy things or genre things are going to be come together and discussed, and hopefully, definitely me, but hopefully we'll have maybe some guests on where we'll talk about more than just supernatural literature, more than just the pulps, but including that. Things like science fiction, paranormal stories, urban legends, spy genre, just sort of a combination of things. And who will decide what we talk about? Well, me, duh. It's my show. But no, we're also going to reach out to you, the fans, and what do you want to discuss? And maybe by itself or in combination with things. You know, Scooby-Doo is this sort of brilliant combination of horror and mystery and teen angst. So there's more than one genre can come together to something. And those who know me, and does anyone really know the true Farmer Dave? But I digress. But those who know me, one of the things that I really like is cyberpunk. Now, I see myself as being, you know, cyberpunk in the early 90s, I kind of see myself as, you know, OG cyberpunk. But the truth is, I was a late adapter for the time. I read, you know, Neuromancer, basically the Bible of cyberpunk, 7 years after it was published. And at the time, I was seen as, you know, showing up late for the party. But now, you know, it's been literally over three decades. I kind of look back as one of the original fans. I know that DB and I have discussed this in other shows, but I wrote a paper at UCLA my senior year for an English class, and he wrote a paper in high school almost on the exact subject. And my thesis on this paper was that the future was going to be counterculture, and that computers were going to be, and that there would be a counterculture of nerds that would equivalent to the hippies of the 60s, and they would be the driving force behind technology and computers in the last part of the 20th and the early 21st century. And just as the hippies had at least sort of their dogma and ideas based on Heinlein's Stranger in a Strange Land and The Lord of the Rings, that this new counterculture was going to, at its root, be based on the early cyberpunk books. What I didn't get back then, and DB also, so at least two of us missed it, computers were not going to be counterculture. They were going to be culture. That they were going to be so embedded into our daily lives that they would become commonplace. They would be almost as necessary as, say, a car in Southern California was in the 90s. And that would be almost hard to function in this new culture without it. And as such, these counterculture elements that were found in the cyberpunk book were lost on society. Not lost, but they didn't become a driving force as the realities of the modern technological world took hold and they became, I don't want to say passé. So what I want to talk about today is the origin and definition of the word cyberpunk. And the first definition is also the origin of the word, and that is a short story by Bruce Bethke. Bethke wrote the short story Cyberpunk in, well, it was published in 1983, probably wrote it the year before, and it was first published in Amazing Stories. It basically tells the story of Mikey, who is, they don't use the word, but he's basically a hacker. And he is basically, his parents don't get him. And he falls into the influence of basically this cult-like leader, and he sort of has this sort of gang of young techies, hackers, and sort of almost a cult-like group of about four, I believe. And the story is basically his rebellion against his parents and his parents' attempt to control him, which is, you know, the age-old story of the teenage rebel versus the, you know, the parental figures. Now, Bethke said that he came up with the term cyberpunk by writing down all these sort of computer-related words, cyber, techno, you know, data, things like that, on one list of yellow post-it notes, and then all these sort of criminal words, punk, thug, goon, on another list, and just kept combining it till he found the one he liked, which is cyberpunk. Now, one thing that Bethke will later say is that the worst move he ever made in his life was not to copyright the word. So the word cyberpunk is public domain. It is not a copyrighted word and can be used by anyone. That's going to be one of the reasons why it becomes a popular word or term. Anybody can use it in their fiction. Now, there are always legal disclaimers, and I'm not a lawyer. There are certain fonts of the word. There are certain things such as role-playing games that are limited, but the term public, the term cyberpunk is a free-range word. It's not copywritten. Now, I said that I was sort of slow, early 90s, getting into cyberpunk, but I was pretty heavy in it, enough that I was writing, you know, college papers on the subject, and I did not get to read the short story cyberpunk until like 2018. And the reason why is it's going to be kind of hard to find. Now, until recently, I have not had a print copy. And Bethke is going to be, I don't want to say this in a bad word, but he's going to be a little vague about what happened. And part of this, I think, is his hands are tied behind his back for legal reasons. Now, Bethke, and we're going to talk more about the early cyberpunk writers, but it's always going to be, you know, in the 90s and 2000s when I was researching this, it's always the short story. The word comes from the short story by Bruce Bethke, then kind of drops it. Bethke, although he is going to write Headcrash, which is a, you know, pretty important cyberpunk book in the 90s, he's going to kind of disappear from the original writers, which would be called cyberpunks. I mean, it's always going to be, he coined the term in his short story. But nobody I knew had read it. We all knew about it, but we had not read it in the 90s. And the reason, there is a reason why. So what I'm going to talk about next, I pieced together from Bethke's website, an interview in Strange Horizons by Lynn Jamnick from 2005, and an interview he did on the Storypunks podcast in 2018. So there was a lot of hype to make this short story into a book. And so he continued it into a book. And as far as I know, I've only seen Bethke's version of this story. And I take it for his word. I have no reason to doubt this, but I haven't heard the other side. And he basically sold the rights for the print copy of Cyberpunk as an extended novel. And he had a very definite plan on how it was going to end. And in this story, remember, Mikey is high school age, and he was very wanted the story to end in the school. And his publisher, and to best of my knowledge, who this publisher is has never been acknowledged. And that may very well be due to, you know, legal reasons, which, okay, I get. Wanted the story to end, or wanted the story to have a sort of Boris Vallejo cover where Mikey has like an Uzi and a cheerleader is grabbing onto his chest, sort of anticlimactic combat at the end. Now, remember, Bethke wants this story to end in a high school, and even though from what I gather this is pre-Columbine, but still, he did not want his story to end in a shootout in the school. And because of this, the publisher tanked the story. This is why I, a cyberpunk enthusiast, cannot read the story until about 2018. Again, we had all heard of the story. It was the holy grail of cyberpunk stories. But no one I knew personally had read it because you had to pretty much get a copy of the original Amazing Stories. And, you know, no one really had that. Now, I read it online in 2018. And as near as I could tell, the reason why this is that the publisher bought the print rights to the story, not the electronic media rights. And as such, Bethke publishes it for free, and if you pay $5, you can read the novel. Now, recently that has changed, and if you're into cyberpunk literature, the great big book of cyberpunk is this amazing 1,200-page, super small type. It's just amazing cyberpunk story, and it's in there. So this is the first time I've encountered it in physical print, and that just came out last year. And interesting enough, it's not the lead story of cyberpunk. It's in there, it's in the beginning of sort of the society section, but that's something else. So the first definition of cyberpunk is the Bethke short story and later his novel. And if you have not read it, it's worth reading. And now, one of the things that people basically got who grew up in the 21st century are going to complain about it and cyberpunk in general is that it's old hat. Well, that's because all these cyberpunk concepts have come into our basic science fiction. At the time, it was groundbreaking. It was instrumental. It was game-changing. And now these incredibly brand new concepts are tropes. So, yes, I get that if you grew up after the computer revolution, then yes, it might be, you've seen this, done that type situation. But at the time, it was instrumental. And I think it's important to read for that reason, if not other. The one thing, too, I think Bethke got in ways that other cyberpunk writers didn't. And, you know, we're going to talk about Gibson, but almost all their characters are adult. Bethke got how there would be a generational divide because of technology. And again, this was much more when I was growing, or, you know, young adult in the 80s and the 90s than now. But this new technology, the computer, is going to create a balance, or it's going to mess up the balance, where all of a sudden, children, youth, high school students, had an advantage over their parents. And the best example I can give is growing up in Southern California, that children of immigrants who spoke English and their parents didn't, the children had this huge societal advantage. And almost, and I'm not saying any of my friends who were in this situation did, but there was always this concern they would use it as a bargaining chip or as a ploy against their parents. We see that Mikey would be completely at his parents' whim, except he controls technology that they do not. And I think that is maybe the sort of, that is the brilliance of cyberpunk, the short story, compared to all the other cyberpunk stories, is that no one else got that. The protagonist in almost all the other major cyberpunk stories that are going to come out at that time are... Okay, so definition two of cyberpunk. And that is going to be a group of writers who in the 80s basically focused on this new wave noir style writing of technological short stories. And to some novels too. And this comes from Gardner Dozois. Gardner was at the time the editor is in Isaac Asimov magazine. And he would write a lot of editorials, and he was talking about this new wave of science fiction writers. Rudy Ruckner, John Walter Williams, John Shirley, Bruce Sterling, and of course, William Gibson. And he came up with the term cyberpunk to describe this new generation of science fiction writers who wrote dark, dystopian, near-future, high-tech stories. And it began to be called the writers cyberpunks. Once Dozois started calling these writers cyberpunks, then that leads right into definition three, which is the main sort of definition now of cyberpunk, is this style of writing, near fiction, dystopia, corporations own everything, focusing on an individual character. You have absolutely have supporting characters, but in sort of this noir hero style, you have one character struggling against the odds in a dark future where computers are nearly magic. Now, is this going to exist before cyberpunk? Before what is considered the main book of cyberpunk, Neuromancer. And we're going to see that in of things like True Names. But this is when it becomes a genre. It becomes a thing unto itself. And as Bethke's book or short story, Cyberpunk, it's where the term comes from. The source for the genre or the, you know, you are example or the fountainhead for which all waters flow is going to be William Gibson's Neuromancer. Now, Neuromancer is going to come out about the same time, within, I think, a year, of the release of Ridley Scott's Blade Runner. Now, I'll probably do something on Blade Runner. Yes, I love that movie, except for that scene where Deckard forces himself on Rachel. Blade Runner was not a success financially. And yes, it is considered by many a cyberpunk movie, but it's not really, there's no real computers. The technology, it's more noir than it is high tech, more cyber. Other than the androids, the most cybernetic thing is the Voight comp machine in that little kind of computer picture thing that Deckard keeps yelling, enhance, enhance on. But it caught the feeling that cyberpunk was trying to spread. The dark futures, corporations as political, powerful entities, that we, the individual against this society, they have no control. So it is spiritually very much a cyberpunk movie. In technology, it is much less a cyberpunk movie than, say, the earlier pre-cyberpunk movie Tron. And we'll talk a little bit about this in gaming, but when I first started playing Shadowrun, and I was trying to explain what a Decker does in cyberspace, we didn't know what the word cyberspace, it wasn't a commonly used word. I had to explain it like, well, you go into the Tron universe, because that was the only reference we had. And again, Tron, which I think is a very cyberpunk movie, predates the term, the word, and the movement cyberpunk. The book that sort of casts the word cyberpunk in cement with the genre is going to be Bruce Sterling's short story collection, Mirror Shades, the Cyberpunk Anthology, which is a great collection. And I think I read it 91, 92, and it was forever on, you know, the shelves of the local bookstores. And it was sort of got the, it was an introduction to a lot of people who were sci-fi fans into cyberpunk and the term, this is cyberpunk. And bluntly, I noticed it, but thought, kind of kept it to myself. Half the stories in that are not cyberpunk. Absolutely, there are some. There's some great ones. The John Shirley story. There's some Gibson stories. But even Mirror Shades, which comes from, you know, Mozart and Mirror Shades, which is a Gibson and Sterling story. It's a dimensional traveling story. It's not cyberpunk. Rudy Ruckner, who is one of the founders of cyberpunk, his story is about Houdini escaping from nuclear bombs. Not cyberpunk at all. And I kind of thought I was the only one who noticed this, but Rewired, the post-cyberpunk anthology book, partly edited by John Kessel. Kessel shares letters with Bruce Sterling. And Sterling admits that even back then, he was trying to subvert and to not derail, but this concept of cyberpunk. And that he openly admits that at least half of the stories in what is the definitive cyberpunk anthology isn't cyberpunk. So there's always going to be this question of what is cyberpunk? And I think Sterling was trying to say that. Interesting story kind of to punk is that the first steampunk story, A Different Engine, or Difference Engine, excuse me, was written by Gibson and Sterling. So they basically created two forms of punk fiction. But even then, he was deconstructing and subverting the concept of what cyberpunk is. And now, as technology becomes more general, computers are less magic, but we do see some, you know, honest to goodness, corporate horror stories. We get in a long debate. When did cyberpunk end? When did post-cyberpunk start? What is cyberpunk? What is post-cyberpunk? And bluntly, that's for another podcast. So definition three is the writing style that started in the 80s of dark, dystopian, near-future, high-tech, low-life noir stories. Definition four is going to be a tabletop role-playing game created by Mike Pondsmith. And I think, again, surprisingly, one of the best sources on this, and it's only a little bit, it's going to be Bruce Sterling. I mean, absolutely what Pondsmith wrote about how he created it, I think is very important. But Bruce Sterling in the Hacker Crackdown, which is, it's a dated book, I admit, but it's a picture in time of hacker culture and the way that the early 80s looked at hackers and computers in general. And it's a fascinating look. I've read it then, I reread it, and it's definitely this interesting sort of snapshot in time of hacker culture. But he has a chapter about how the U.S. Secret Service raided Steve Jackson's game because they thought GURPS Cyberpunk was basically going to be a manual on how to commit credit fraud. It's a real thing. Look it up. And by the way, up until 9/11, the Secret Service was part of the Treasury Department. And this presidential thing was just sort of a small gig. It's a whole long story. Maybe I'll tell another story. But they were in charge of credit fraud. That's why it's the Secret Service, not the FBI, that's raiding Steve Jackson's, yada yada. But so back to that chapter in the Hacker Crackdown, Sterling compares the three main 90s role-playing tabletop games of Cyberpunk, Cyberpunk GURPS, and Shadowrun. He leaves out Cyberspace, which, okay, even I didn't play that one, in which he basically describes Cyberpunk as being this number-crunchy rule game and heavy on the rules, and it absolutely was and is. And even in this new sort of golden era of role-playing games where rules light, story-driven stories, Cyberpunk Red is still kind of crunchy, but no means as crunchy as, say, the Cyberpunk 2020, which is basically the second edition. And a lot of the tropes that we now see in cyberpunk and post-cyberpunk are going to be codified in this game. In fact, people who are introduced first to modern cyberpunk and then this game see it kind of a generic cyberpunk setting. But that's because a lot of these tropes and settings and corporations and ideas were developed and played with and perfected in this game. And it was going to work its way back into science fiction and culture. So number five definition is a criminal who commits computer crimes. And I first came across this and I was watching, I wasn't even paying attention. I walked in the room and it was either Jeopardy or Ben Stein's money? And basically the question was that this is a science fiction term used for a computer criminal. And I scratched my head. I couldn't figure out. And the answer was cyberpunk. And I guess they cited some dictionary at the time. And so that is a cyberpunk definition. But it's one that has lost meaning, or, you know, it's no longer a very common use term, as things like hacker and cracker and dark hats and white hats and black hats have all kind of taken its place. But that, as a term for people who commit computer crimes, is about as close a definition as my concept of that senior paper as reality got. And sort of the final definition is going to be CD Projekt Red's video game. And surprising, a lot of people, this is kind of, especially outside science fiction, this is their introduction to the word cyberpunk. And obviously the term's been there literally 41 years since, you know, Bethke's story was published. Here's the irony, is this concept of computers and high tech and doing what you want in a society that attempts to control you in the name of capitalism. It's computer game that is making all this money that comes from Eastern Europe is where the introduction to the word cyberpunk comes to many people. And again, you guys know I can't play video games. I make the person walk in the wall. I had a really hard difficulty getting out of the bathroom in Arisaka in, you know, the cyberpunk game. And I got to a point where I couldn't get past the first mission without getting shot. But it does, again, the cyberpunk video game is nothing new. And that is beautiful, because it takes all these old four-decade ideas and concepts of loyalty among thieves, or is there, where there is no loyalty to the superiors and the higher-ups, this independence, this Raymond Chandler-esque hero in a world designed to control him. And it presents it in a way that, if not new, is new to a new generation. And that is part of the beauty of the game. And in the story is not new, if the plot is not new, the medium is new. Now, there absolutely have been cyberpunk games since the 80s. But they haven't had this amount of success and popularity that the 2077 game has had. So that is where the word cyberpunk comes from, as well as some of the definitions. And we're going to be exploring some more things as the show goes on, including I definitely want to talk about Robert Chambers and Ambrose Bierce and The King of Yellow, as well as things like my experiences growing up with the Dungeons & Dragons Saturday morning cartoon in a time where Saturday morning cartoons do not exist. So I hope that you enjoy this. I hope that you continue to listen to Geeky Crossroads, as well as The People's Guide to the Cthulhu Mythos. And I am Farmer Dave, and I will be seeing you next time.